Blog Talk Radio.
I don't want to get in the habit of taking weeks off because there is some good television on at the 9 o'clock hour, but I'm not going to be watching it this week. No, I'm not. I'm going to be talking to you, and we're going to be talking about three things tonight. At least three things, and anything you would like to add to the mix. Now, you can join in our conversation if you dial 347-945-6713. That is a toll call. If that is a toll call for you, please use your cell phone because we're after 9 o'clock and most cell phone rates. It will be a free call for you, and I don't think anybody pays per minute long-distance phone calls anymore anyhow. But you can call 347-945-6713, and you can reach me. You can Skype in, I think, right off the Blog Talk Radio show if you want to come in that way. And, of course, you can always join us in the Norm at Night chat room, which is now open. And I'll be more than happy to spend some time by what you say in the chat room. I'll be happy to pass it on to the listening audience. Now, we're up over the 51,000 mark, closing in on 52,000 listeners, but we seem to have fallen off a little bit. And I guess that's my fault as much as it is anyone else's because, I haven't been as lively on the show as I have been at one time. But if you are out there listening, I want to thank you because I like doing this, and I like doing this on Tuesday nights. I'm not sure if an hour is really the right length for the show, but I'll try to determine that at another time. I really would, however, like some callers. I know you're out there listening because I see the reports. But it's really much more interesting to me when I have a real live human being to bounce myself off of because I don't just want to be listening to myself talk. First of all, I'm waiting for the call to call in from the West Coast. We canceled the show last week because the Colt's dad passed away. And I would like to take just a few minutes here for us to say goodbye to the Colt's dad. He died in Buffalo, New York, the place I grew up, or where the Colt grew up. Yeah, Colt and I have known each other for a lot of years. Going on 40. Wow. Because I'll be graduating from college 40 years ago this June. I got the usual money-raising envelope from them today, the State University of New York College at Buffalo. The things we're going to talk about tonight, that actually might have been a good lead-in for the Occupy. But we're going to talk about leverage. I really don't understand. Well, actually, I have a basic idea about leverage, and I'm going to share that with you. Then we're going to talk about schools, and I've gotten myself embroiled in a argument on a blog out there called The Innovative Educator, which, by the way, I do recommend to anybody who wants to go and read it, because there's some really good stuff in there. And what we did talk about in the Innovative Educator today brought to mind, of course, the Occupy movement, which I guess connects back to I've got nobody in the chat room, but if you want to give us a call here on the Norm at Night show, the number's 347-945-6713. I would appreciate anybody who can join in and help the conversation carry along. But borrow. That essentially is what leverage is. It's borrowing. It's making big bets that you're going to get a payoff on that borrowing, especially when you borrow to buy things such as securities and derivatives. The only problem is if those loans go south, so does your company. I'm a real fan of MSNBC. It's especially now that I have time on my hands during the day, MSNBC allows me, you know, I spend a lot of time on MSNBC and with my Twitter accounts. I always start the morning up, and sometimes, well, I'll get up about 5 o'clock, so I always watch a little bit of Way Too Early with Willie Geist, and then I love to see the opening of Morning Joe, to see who's going to be on the show, to see what it promises, and then I crank up my tweets, read my emails, and watch Morning Joe. It's usually a pretty wild experience, and I would recommend Morning Joe to anybody out there who listens to the radio, because it's always, and if you're a political junkie, and there's little or no question that I am indeed a political junkie, and anybody who's been listening to Norm at Night for any length of time knows that I, without question, am a progressive Democrat. I make no bones about that. It's out in the open. In fact, most progressive Democrats, I have to look to the right to see most progressive Democrats. I'm very disappointed in this president, and I wish to God he would step up to the plate and give us some of the promise that he all excited in us with, without any doubt, was his sterling oratory. It's starting to get a hollow ring to it, and anybody would like to dispute that with me, the number's 347-945-6713, and I'd be glad to have that conversation with you. But anyway, leverage. Well, another program that I really like to listen to, there are other ones during the day. I have been listening to the new Alex Witt program, not Alex Witt, Alex Wagner program that's on at noon, and I like that a lot. And Saturdays and Sundays, we've been getting some new, oh, God, it's turning into an MSNBC advertising fest. But anyway, Uppers with Chris Hayes, he's a little annoying with his preppiness, but there are some real juicy issues that are talked about on that show, and they are talked about from a progressive standpoint, usually, which does excite me. One thing that you have to keep in mind, however, when you are indeed talking about Morning Joe or Alex Wagner or Chris Hayes or the show I'm going to talk about in a minute, the Dylan Radigan show, that's really a lot of fun because it comes on at 4 o'clock. And he's a pretty interesting guy. I don't know. I would love to watch. I wish Ed would come back at 6 o'clock because Al Sharpton is just starting to really grate on me. Not so much because of what he says, because I agree with most of it. It's just he's unabashed. I guess that this makes little or no sense. His constant calling of Mitt Romney Willard, I can't take that anymore. But anyway, that's okay. But today, I was, I had to just get out of the house, you know, and so I went over to Barnes & Noble. And while I was there, I happened to come across a Dylan Radigan blog program. And I'm looking for it now because I don't want to misquote the article, but Radigan talked about leverage, which is what I want to talk about now. And another program. Hey, Colt, I see you logged in. Anytime you want to call, we'd love to have you with us. Particularly since his first subject on the agenda tonight is indeed leverage and what exactly it is. And let's see here. According to the wiki, leverage, also referred to as gearing in the United Kingdom, is a general term for any technique to multiply gains and losses. Now, common ways to attain leverage are borrowing money, buying fixed assets, and using derivatives. Equity is what someone owns in a company. Rather than using, or the cash that you have in a company is also equity. Rather than using that equity to do something, what a company does is borrow money. Now, the more money it borrows, the less of its own equity capital it needs. So any profits or losses are shared among a smaller base and are proportionately larger as a result. Well, you have to remember, one of the other ways of getting equity or to operate with is by issuing stock, and then you can use the stock to operate. The problem with issuing stock, if it is a problem actually, is that more people now own a share of the company. And if more people have a share of the company, any profits that the company makes, obviously, have to be divided among more people. So what someone does is, rather than issue stock to get money to work with or equity, you borrow it. And hopefully you can pay back the loan and still make a reasonable profit and divide it up among a smaller group of people. For instance, I start Sidecar Productions, and I wish to have a, and I throw $1,000 of my own money into Sidecar Productions. And we get established and start doing stuff, and I say that I need $10,000 more to expand the operations of Sidecar Productions. Now, I could issue equity stock where I give you a piece of the company for the money that you invest into the company. And that is all well and good. And so I have to let you in on my phone. Well, rather than do that, I borrow the $10,000 from Joe Bank. And so Joe Bank gives me $10,000. But Joe Bank doesn't give me $10,000 of their own equity. They go and borrow the $10,000 from somebody else. And obviously at a lower rate than they're going to give it to me if they can. And if they can, if they can do that, everything is peachy creamy. As long as everybody's paying their bills. And oh, we got the Colt coming in. Go ahead, Colt, welcome back.
Hey, Norm, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. You been listening to our leverage discussion here?
I caught the first part of it, yeah.
I just wondered how I was doing.
Oh, pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you're the capitalist among us.
Well, there are some famous Democrats now who joined the game.
Yeah, like the ex-governor of New Jersey is now the ex.
He was
the ex. What was the name of his company?
Oh, MF Global. Yeah.
Hey, if you're out there, especially if you're one of the shareholders of MS Global, they equity themselves or leverage themselves right out of business.
Yeah, I think there have been estimates that he was leveraged 41 times, you know, his capital base. I mean, that's insane. Although there are banks that are moving up in that range again.
Well, that's what they say, and for people listening out there, when they say 41 times his capital base, it means that they borrowed 41 times what the company's worth.
Yes.
And invested it in something. Well, that loan goes bust, so does the company.
Yeah, his problem was he bought a whole bunch of European debt, sovereign debt. And you can figure out what happened there.
Yeah, but I don't understand why it's happened already. Why they're still not in the game, because nobody's defaulted.
Yeah, well, that's the deal, but the market, the value, you know, has declined. Even though nobody's missed an interest payment, you know, the underlying securities have dropped in value. So he's got loans he's got to pay, and then you have to sell things to pay, and it gets fairly
complicated. Yeah, but I mean, unless he's just a complete moron.
I think people who make bets like that.
He should have borrowed the money at a lower rate than the interest being paid to him.
Yeah, but how it works, the way they leverage up like that, is it's I don't know how else to describe it, but, you know, house of cards or whatever you want to call it. Let's say he borrows the first, he doubles, right? Then whatever he buys becomes the equity for the next loan, and it keeps repeating on and on and on and on, you see? So he's got to make interest payments on, essentially, he's got his capital, 40 different loans. And the rates don't get better as you go higher.
But this is my question. Okay, we know how he lost. How would he have won?
Only if there would have to have been a significant improvement, and that would have entailed a number of events. Let's say the European Union decides to issue a tremendous number of bonds, borrow money, and bail out all of the, you know, member states that are in trouble. Or the other more likely event would be the our Federal Reserve injecting tremendous amounts of capital to the commercial banks, and there's every chance that that's already happening. I mean, it happened in 2008. Quite a lot. I mean, trillions of dollars went to Societe Generale and Lloyd's. I mean, all those banks got tremendous amounts of money. Commerce Bank in Germany, you know. So the main problem, of course, is Italy. Italy is, I know they're in the top five in terms of banking. I think they're number three or four, you know. And so we're talking about something enormous. I mean, if those banks fail, it's, you know, everyone's out of business as far as that goes. You know? And I don't think he just bet on sovereign debt, but I also think, you know, he picked up the debt from some of these banks as well. So it's... Their bookkeeping apparently was so miserable that, I mean, they're still tracking the money down. They're trying to find out where the hell it is. But the worst thing that they've done is to use client funds for their investments. And that's a no-no. You don't do that. Because
but
he
wait
had a lot.
A minute. Isn't that what they do?
Not really, because, well, they do to some extent, but you can't, you know, let's
say
I'm...
You've got to tell them about it.
Yeah, let's say I have an account with $1 million, you know, and I'm trading and doing what I do, you know, and I have a certain amount that's in cash and a certain amount that's in equities or bonds or whatever I've decided to invest in. But they're still using my stuff, my account, and borrowing again. Basically, they're borrowing my money and using it as leverage for other loans. So the money doesn't actually move. It's just that we borrowed against money that's not yours. You see how that works?
But I don't understand. I thought... They make money by making money with your money.
Right, right.
That's what they do.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, you know, I think their relationships are probably somewhat different, let's say, with my broker. My cash is there, you know, the money that is cash, and I'm getting a money market rate on that. Now, like any other bank, that's like a deposit. So a certain amount of that they can use. You know, that's part of the agreement. But just the cash, they can't do anything with the equities I have. Now, except that they are allowed to loan them to people for short positions. But as soon as I make the call, meaning I want to sell it or do whatever I want to do with it, they have to pay up immediately. That's, you know. And I don't think MF Global was in a position to do that anymore.
You mean they didn't have the money to
do
it?
They didn't have the money, exactly. And the worst part of this is for any of their customers trying to get their money back. Because as far as I know, they only have the basic insurance. And if you're over that amount, you know, you may not see any of that back again. So, what is it, SIPC? So,
all right, well, here's the hard question. Why should you?
Oh, well, of course. I mean, that's...
Isn't that the game you're playing?
Yeah, if they go down and they're in bankruptcy and all the rest of that, I mean, you're going to get the amount that you're insured and potentially whatever is left of the company, you'll be in line with the rest of the creditors, and you'll probably be at the bottom, meaning there are other bondholders and whatever who are ahead of you, you know. So we'll see how that works out. It's incredible. It's very complex. I've watched people on television discuss it, and there's just so many unanswered questions. They just don't have it, you know. So, it's amazing a firm that size could, you know, get involved in that, especially with a person who back in 2008 was on all the talk shows warning about the same thing. I've been enjoying some of the, when they go back a few years and pull up some of those interviews, it's insane. But,
well, I can't wait to read Dylan Ranigan's book, Greedy Bastards.
Oh, yeah. He worked, he had his own show on CNBC.
MSNBC. In this market, it's at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, he was, he was a moderator of a show called Fast Money. And
that's right.
Yeah, and he was very vocal, very passionate. His rants are famous. You could go on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, every once in a while it goes crazy.
Yeah. Because, see, prior to the mortgage situation where, you know, they started packaging mortgages on a large scale and selling them with AAA ratings and even central banks are buying this stuff. That was part of the real problem. And prior to that, most of these investment banks were only leveraged about 30 times. And they had to get permission from the SEC to go up to 40. But the deal was that the SEC had to have very tight regulatory power and audit them continually. Well, none of that happened. You had Bush's guy, Chris Cox, at the SEC, and he did he did nothing. He could care less. So, but you've got to know, too, that the current head of the SEC, Mary Shapiro, was on the board at that time, too. She was just as much a part of it as anybody. And now she's the head, right? And now you've seen some of these deals that are getting thrown back by the judges. The most recent one with Citigroup. One before that with Bank of America. They're giving these guys such cherry deals, basically just letting them off the hook, letting them plead no contest, and they settle for a meager fine. And
wait, are they doing something illegal?
It's not illegal. But what they're, you know, it's more or less like, it's cronyism. There's no other word for it, you know.
But is that illegal?
It's not illegal. It's just unfortunately unregulated. The judge is looking at this stuff and throwing these back, saying these settlements, you know, are unacceptable. And he apparently has the power to do that, even though both sides in the case are agreeing. I don't know how that works. I don't know how it works exactly.
Nobody's going bankrupt but Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh. Well, yeah, and that's not even related to any of this. I mean, you're talking about something quite different.
No, I know. I was just making a little joke there.
Yeah, well, Vallejo, California, Jefferson County in Alabama. I mean, but they're, again, they're related. They had their own issues, let's just put it that way.
Okay. In your view, what happens if you make leveraging illegal?
Well, you can't make it illegal. You don't want to make it illegal, or else there's no credit at all. Okay? You just want to limit it. You want to limit it to, you know, where the risk is acceptable. And we always thought that 30 times for an investment bank was reasonable. For a commercial bank, it's 9 times. For an individual, it's basically 2 times. You can borrow, you have $100, you can invest $200, you know. So
the margin call is 50% still?
Oh, well, it's double whatever you have for an individual.
Right, so it's 50%.
Right, and I believe.
So if I have $100, I can borrow $200.
Right, exactly.
Well,
no, you have $100, you can borrow another $100. So it's even money for that.
That's 1-to-1.
1-to-1, right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So actually, if I had 100, I could borrow 100 and buy 200 worth.
Right, right. And even
and
that.
If that stock price goes down, I have to maintain that margin.
Right.
And so if it goes down, I get a margin call.
Yeah, now you'll get that at, I think it's around 30%. And then they'll demand that you sell something or put more cash in, one or the other, you know.
Right. And if the value goes down 50%, I'm busted.
Yeah, you're gone.
There's nothing I can do.
Right, unless you have money somewhere else and you put money into the account, you know.
So I buy $20 shares of Cult at $10 a share.
Mm-hmm.
With 100 of my own and 100 on the margin.
Right.
Cult goes up to $20. So now I'm clear.
Yeah, yeah. You're clear once you sell it, and then that pays off the loan or the margin.
Right. Or I could pay the margin myself.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Okay, now if I sell the stock, who pays the loan off? Me?
Oh, that's done automatically. Any cash?
So if the stock was at $20,
right,
and I sold it,
right,
okay,
I
would get $400,
right,
$100 of which was mine to begin with,
mm-hmm,
$100 which I borrowed,
right,
which gets paid back,
mm-hmm.
So I would have started with 100, and now I have 300.
All right. The And that would then, in addition, would be any interest that you had to pay. I think I haven't used margin in quite a long time, but I think it's running maybe 8 to 9%.
Well, you actually have to pay interest on the margin
yes.
loan.
Yes, that's how they make money. So you have a secured loan. The loan is secured by your equity. So they have a secured loan, and they're collecting 8 to 9% on it. So they can't lose, unless you get completely wiped in a single day or something like that, you know. Also, they have, once you're below where you've got the margin call, they have the option of selling your stock without your permission.
Right, well, that's essentially what a call
is. So they can
is.
Do that, too. See, that's a...
That's what a call is. They're going
right,
to tell
right.
you what's
well,
selling
the call,
it
yeah, the,
or come up with the money.
Yeah, the call, you usually they'll give you a couple days, you know. Because sometimes your stock will bounce back, or you can have the option.
So now, is a short sale technically leveraging?
No. All you're
don't
doing.
Don't I borrow stock on a short sale?
Right, you do, but you don't pay any extra on that, except if that stock pays a dividend. You're responsible for the dividend. You have to pay the dividend yourself. Most short traders avoid that. They'll be out of
so,
it.
So you know, you simply don't make short trades on dividend day.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. But although the very following day, once it's ex-dividend, the stock will go down that exact amount. So, I mean, you could ride through it if you want to, you know.
And so now I'm a big investment bank.
Oh, okay.
Now, has the government reduced the percentage of capital that an investment bank has to have on hand as opposed to what they lend?
Okay, the SEC can limit the amount of leverage. They haven't done that in ages. The other thing that can happen, depending on what...
Wait a minute. The Federal Reserve is what determines what banks have to have on reserve.
Oh, well, yeah, but that's quite different. Yeah, that's... You see, any bank that is a member of the reserve has to have an account, and they're required to have so much money in that account. And I think it's 10% now. Canadian banks are like 20%, which is why they're not in as much trouble as we are. So. See, that's
well, what I've been reading, nobody knows what anybody has. It's gotten so convoluted.
Well, here's the thing. The federal, if you read the duties and obligations of the Federal Reserve, nearly all of what happened over
hey,
the
you're,
past
hold
decade,
on one second. Hey, nine. Oh, wait, that's you.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, that's me.
Oh.
I just lost.
Somebody. Okay. Oh, shoot. I hope.
Sorry, guest. You know, you were trying to dial in there, and I lost you. Oh, well. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, between the Federal Reserve and the SEC, they completely shirk their responsibility. All of the things they're required to do, they did not do. So, you know, you can look at the history of the whole thing, and they're as much responsible as anybody as far as I'm concerned.
So what would happen if the Federal Reserve said to all the banks, you have to bring your balance sheets to where your cash reserves are 40% of your balance sheet.
Oh, well, you'd have a credit crunch of unbelievable proportions. That's
well, you know what? It's time to bring that money back from overseas then, folks.
Yeah, well, the unfortunate thing, well, you're talking about, you're not talking about banks. You're talking about what the...
Well, no, that's what you've got to have. So you got to tell all the people that got your money, you need that money, and you need it now.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, that would just collapse everything.
What would happen?
What would happen? Well, they'd have to sell practically everything they've got. I mean, you know, to include U.S. Treasury bonds, sovereign debt, corporate debt, equity.
Right.
I mean, there'd just there'd be a massive sale.
And so we could eliminate the national debt during that sale.
No, that isn't quite how it works.
Well, tell me why it wouldn't work.
Okay,
then
well...
you're selling those bonds at a fire sale.
Yeah, okay, well... So they remember, they're going to be selling our debt, which is probably most of the debt they hold.
Right, and we'll buy it.
We'll buy... Oh, okay, so you're saying the Federal Reserve... Well, you're not only going to do that
to
America...
Do the opposite of... Wait a minute. Do the opposite. What did they call it when they pumped all that money into the economy? What did they call that?
It's got various names, but it's liquidity. It's
but he called it something.
Yeah,
like a correction. Well, what was that word they used?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I know the initials are QE, quantitative easing.
Quantitative easing. That's what it was.
Okay.
Yes, quantitative easing.
Yeah.
Well, come on, guess. Log back in, guest. We want somebody else to join the conversation.
Right. Well, there's more problems than that. If you do this, okay, both the dollar and treasury bonds plummet dramatically. Now, we're the fiat currency, which means that every central bank of every country in the world is holding their reserves in our debt. And if you knock it down like that, you've got, you know, the whole financial system is history. Just say that. You can't do it.
Okay. Can't means, in this case, it's not a policy to try. That it's impossible to do.
Oh, it's not, but it would be the most reckless event I can conceive of. It's just...
Okay, so your guy Ron Paul wins the day, and they eliminate the Federal Reserve. Isn't that the same thing?
That would take more than a decade to do. He's almost stated that already. It would be a very gradual process. And there would be a replacement, okay? I mean, it probably would go back to the Treasury. So we would go back to whatever we had before. Probably set up another regulatory body.
We had nothing before. From 1830 to 1912, we had nothing.
Right, but there were alternatives to the Federal Reserve.
And what were they?
Well, you didn't have to set it up like almost like a government-sponsored entity, you know, giving it autonomy. Now, I understand why they did that, but, you know, we don't necessarily have to go that route. In other words, only the government prints money. Now we read. Now at the present, we do print. We print. You know, the Treasury does print money, and it is purchased by the Federal Reserve. It doesn't become money until they buy it.
The federal government
prints money and coins coins.
Print money.
But it's worthless until the Federal Reserve buys it.
It prints currency to represent created value.
But you see,
you and I both know. You and I both know when I go into a bank and borrow. I go into a bank tomorrow and borrow $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
To start a business.
Right.
On that bank's balance sheet, they do not transfer $5,000 of their reserves to me. What they do is they give me a line of credit. And that puts value into the society when I start using that line of credit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm talking
order to do that, the Federal Reserve has to create liquid currency to represent that value so
mm-hmm.
we can trade.
Right, right. But the money the physical money comes from the Treasury. It doesn't have any value because the Federal Reserve buys it at its at the cost. It doesn't have money as currency until the Federal Reserve distributes it.
All right. Yeah, we only have a little time left, but this was great stuff, but I wanted to turn our discussion to school.
Yeah.
Because I got myself into a brouhaha today, if you would.
Uh-huh.
And I want to put it out there to our audience. There's a blog that I love called The Innovative Educator. And it's a great blog, and I recommend it to anyone who wants to read a great blog about education. You can get it at theinnovativeeducator.blogspot.com. Well, on December 6th, which is today, there was a guest post made on The Innovative Educator along the theme of we don't need schools. Schools are on a swing set. The School on a Swing Set was the title of the blog. I jumped at it because that's one of my ideas, and the blog essentially went along that the person who wrote the blog, it was very nicely written. Her name was Sarah Elizabeth Cottrell, that 20-some years ago, her parents had to decide whether or not she and her brother were going to continue to go to school. They couldn't afford the private school. They lived in a rural Georgia county, and so they decided to homeschool the children. And it goes on to say how wonderful it was. The glorious beauty of homeschooling is individualism, freedom. And that's a quote. It's the American way.
Mm-hmm.
And then they complained about all the paperwork that had to go in it. When I got to high school, my parents told me I could go back to school if I wanted. But I didn't want to do that. I knew it would be expensive, far from our house. I had plenty of friends. I had plenty of learning. I was active in the 4-H program in computers and communications, and I was a Georgia master 4-H. I love 4-H. I just wish I could have done it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so they had success without any government intrusion. They were happy and fulfilled. No college really cared if I had a transcript because my SAT score was 1460 out of 1600.
Mm-hmm.
I only took it once. My brother, he became a truck driver, but he lived happily ever after. And so then it finishes. So then she told about how her father used to teach her and her friends Spanish around the picnic table in the backyard, and everybody lives happily ever after. Then at the bottom, it says that Sarah Elizabeth Cottrell teaches advanced Spanish as well as preschool and lower elementary school Spanish in Louisville, Kentucky. She shares her journey with the other world language educators through her blog and on Twitter, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, this jumps out at me. Here's this person biting the hand that feeds, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I wrote, I'm very interested in why she teaches in the school.
Mm-hmm.
Why not teach Spanish in the backyard or down at the local library or on the merry-go-round in the park? If school is the problem, why continue to prop up the problem by working in it? Well, that started a firestorm. First, the owner of the blog says, why do you assume she teaches in a school?
Yeah.
And I responded with a, because it says she does.
Right. I was wondering about that.
You know, that, I mean, the problem with school is not limited to the public schools. This was my independent schools use the same paradigm.
Right.
And that's
right.
The problem. How do we have the type of learning she and her brother were able to engage in?
Yeah.
Maybe we could start with non-mandatory.
Right. Yeah, I can see. I mean, okay, the woman needs to make a living, and so she's working. I mean, that's obvious, right?
Right.
That's why she's doing what she does.
Why does she have to make a living in school?
Well, she'd have to get a job doing something that pays. I mean, that's at a minimum.
Right. She goes off and teaches it. And the answer is, well, I teach in the, her answer to this was, I appreciate your concerns and understand them. I am blessed to have the opportunity to work in a non-public school with progressive administrators who don't make me jump through hoops and give me an extraordinary amount of freedom because they see how much my students learn and love learning.
So she's in a charter or alternative school is what? She's not in a public
school. Right, right. So my response is I smell the 1% here.
Oh, okay.
What would happen if you brought in native speakers and just let them mix with your students and follow them around all day?
Mm-hmm.
Go to all their classes with them and only speak Spanish with them. And, oh, by the way, they're the children of illegals.
Oh, okay. Mm.
It would save the taxpayers a lot of money and would be a wonderful language experience for all of the students.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought I had.
Yeah.
To which the response is, Mr. C, Why are you so bitter? Jeez.
I don't know. I know that you would like to see more progress in education, meaning more alternatives, or even experimentation. You know, let's say that.
Let's just change the paradigm.
Yeah, yeah.
And when people say to me, "To what?" I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I
could
say. But if
the ship's sinking, don't keep trying to sail it.
You know, I let's say, for example, just my neighborhood, my little cul-de-sac. There are 12 families.
Uh-huh.
There are 12 families here, and not all
right?
of us. And not all of us work. In fact, I'd say only half of us work. And it would be completely possible for us to set up a little alternative school, and it would work. I'm sure you could do it. It would need a bit.
My only question is, what do you have to teach anybody except how to read?
Well, reading is one thing, but would you consider, let's say, math or algebra? That's not reading particularly, you know.
Yeah, it is.
Well, it is and it isn't, but it's we're talking about different fields
Newton
here.
Newton invented calculus, and he wrote a book about it.
Well, of course, right, but, you know,
that book.
I could not teach algebra. I could get them to a certain extent to where I lost interest, and that would be it. And I certainly couldn't give them any.
Could you read an algebra book?
Yes, you could, of course. We can do that.
No. Can you?
Yeah, of course.
And after all this complicated discussion about leverage and all that kind of stuff, you just taught us all about leverage. You can do the same with algebra.
Oh, yeah.
If you can read.
Right. I see your point there, you know.
And
but
all
now,
I want to do is teach people how to read.
Mm-hmm.
And let them go find out what they want to know.
Right. Well, I would say, I mean, you know, one, you know, I don't want, you know, I would say that this teacher who you know, wrote the letter of her life and that, one, I think she had a particularly good situation, which I don't think you're going to find in every household, you know. Certainly not where both parents have to work, you know. And so, I mean, I'm just saying there are a lot of economic hurdles you've got to get over to get to this point where we can do these things.
Now, we can save this for next time because we're running out of time. I hope everything went well in Buffalo. I saw the write-up in the paper.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was tough. I mean, the first couple of days, and then going through Dad's apartment was not easy. But you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But you know.
Where did he live?
He lived over in the Riverside area, and he'd been very reclusive the last year or so, and we also think that he had stopped taking his medications, and it looks like he started smoking again a couple of months ago. He wasn't eating. There's no food in the refrigerator, nothing. I mean, so he had, you know, neighbors were bringing him meals each day, and that's how all that was. You know.
When did you get back?
Oh, I got back Sunday night. So,
wish I would have known. I would have stayed.
Oh, you were up there?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
I left Sunday to come back.
Oh. Well, there was. I only caught the little blurb on your Facebook page. So you were back in Buffalo. Oh man.
Yeah, I was in Buffalo Sunday. We came back on Sunday.
Yeah, well, I left about, I think my flight was at 3:51 on Sunday afternoon.
3:51 your time?
No, 3:51 Buffalo time.
Oh, okay. So you
and
got there, what, 8 o'clock?
I got there on Tuesday. It was around 7 o'clock, I think.
Oh, okay.
So I was there about 5 days.
Where did you stay?
Oh, I stayed with my mother and sister and my niece. So, yeah, it was, you know.
Well, anyway, I don't want to belabor the subject, but...
Your note in Facebook said that a close friend had passed.
Friend's father.
Oh, okay.
Is what I meant to say. I didn't write it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we're past time, and I got to go eat my dinner, and I will talk to you soon. And that's it for another Norm at Night, and we'll take up the school question next week. We'll see y'all then.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care, man. Good night.
You too. Good night.